Following last week's massacre, residents of Isla Vista confronted misery of another kind, the constant presence of cameras. Some students even held signs that read, "Stop filming our tears." But Richard Martinez, whose 20-year-old son Chris was killed in the attack, is turning to the media to campaign for change.
Why did Chris die? Chris died because of craven, irresponsible politicians and the NRA. Too many have died. We should say to ourselves, not one more.
As Karen Duffin reported last fall, the template for that kind of engagement was established back in 1999 after the massacre at Columbine High School.
My name is Craig Scott, and I am a survivor of the Columbine High School shooting. I also lost my sister, Rachel Joy Scott.
Craig was a student trapped in the library during the rampage. As he left the school, he confronted both his trauma and a country anxious to hear about it. Oprah called, Katie Couric called. He went on the Today Show 2 days after Columbine.
Two kids with trench coats on, they came into the library and they shot Isaiah.
And then you play dead, Craig.
I just ended up laying on the floor. I was praying to God.
Each time a high-profile tragedy occurs, the victims must decide, unsettled and unprepared, whether to share it.
So everything is on the fly, and that creates a lack of perspective about what are the consequences of my doing this or not doing this.
That's Steve Siegel from the Denver District Attorney's Office. He's worked with victims of Columbine, Aurora, Sandy Hook, and many other major tragedies. He says public relations professionals can spend years learning how to calculate how one interview might affect a court case, a relationship, a reputation, 5 weeks or 5 years down the road. It's like playing chess. One move affects the next. But victims don't calculate.
The vast majority of people who are willing to cooperate with the media, they are looking to try to create some sense out of a senseless act.
Craig Scott says talking to the press has been cathartic.
It was therapeutic to be able to talk and have people listen and have people be supportive.
Not everybody wants to do that, and I understand that.
That's Craig's father, Daryl Scott.
It has been not only therapeutic, but it's been a joy because it's like they're still with you as long as you share their memory.
Victims advocates like Steve Siegel say that the line between an interview feeling cathartic and feeling painful or even re-victimizing is thin. Daryl understood this.
A lot of times, media wants to see emotion, and I personally just made a decision in the early days not to perform for the camera. I don't answer a lot of questions like, how did you feel when you heard that your daughter died? I always just say, you know, like any other parent would feel.
Sometimes victims use the media simply because it's the best way to spread the word.
The parents of Adam Walsh, who's been missing since yesterday, knew him.
You may recognize that voice.
I'm John Walsh. For 25 years, I've hunted fugitives all over the world. Tonight,
his son Adam was kidnapped from a shopping mall in 1981. He begged the press to cover the story, but he says they barely did. So 1 week into the search, John took some PR advice from an unlikely source.
The county coroner said raise the reward.
This PR-savvy coroner told John to use the most basic tool of PR, a news hook.
It'll intrigue the media. They'll show up, and it will reinvigorate Adam's case.
Sure enough, the local papers showed up. But 2 weeks later, Adam Walsh was found dead. John still believes that press attention could have brought Adam home alive. With reason. As host of America's Most Wanted, he's used the media to help capture over 1,200 criminals. Media pressure influences the decisions of police and politicians. And that influence is enough to make an otherwise press-shy person talk to the media.
I don't know. From my point of view, I didn't think I had any choice.
Bob Swartz is the father of internet activist Aaron Swartz. In 2011, the federal government charged Aaron with illegally downloading files over the MIT network. Amidst a very aggressive prosecution, Aaron committed suicide, and his death sparked an international outcry.
He was a computer prodigy, an online activist.
He was an idealist who believed we had to live up to something better.
Unlike the Scots, Bob Swartz doesn't like talking to the press.
Yeah, I mean, it's very, emotionally, it's incredibly hard. And I try to erect some degree of emotional distance, but it's very difficult. I mean, what happened was just so shattering that one has a responsibility to make sure that these kinds of things don't happen again.
Bob's goals are ambitious. to make all academic literature free, to modify federal computing laws, and to make structural changes at MIT. So Bob did look for PR help, and he found a professional willing to advise him pro bono.
Well, I think he helped make sense, you know, begin to make sense out of what was going on, you know, try to understand how to approach this. I mean, it was a completely new experience, and I didn't have a clue.
Bob is confronting institutions that have PR experience and deep pockets. But he has the advantages all victims and their families have: a public profile, deep, tragically earned credibility, and an emotional story that provokes interest in arcane-sounding issues. So he can use the media to help level the playing field. But moving from human interest to influence means learning how to attach a personal story to big issues and concrete solutions. In PR speak, this means learning how to bridge. John Walsh.
When I got involved in trying to force the FBI and the Justice Department to stop opposing the missing children's bill, I knew that I would only have a short amount of time on air, and I had to be succinct. I had to be articulate. I had to have a call to action. I better know what I was talking about. And I had to have something to say other than crying and pleading for Adam.
Walsh got his bill passed, and Bob Swartz, advocating after his son's suicide, helped prompt Congress to introduce a bill called Aaron's Law, and MIT to conduct an internal review of its role in Aaron's case. Meanwhile, the Scots have also become advocates for a larger cause through an anti-bullying program they founded called Rachel's Challenge, based on the life and writings of Rachel Scott, Craig's sister who died at Columbine. They say it's the largest school assembly program in the country, and that it's prevented at least 7 school shootings and 500 suicides. But the passion that gives these particular advocates their power also saps their strength. This isn't a product pitch. It's their lives, focused on the worst moment of their lives. John Walsh says,
I say it to every victim. You really don't have an obligation to carry forward. If you can't carry forward financially, if you can't carry forward emotionally, if you can't carry forward because it's destroying your family relationships, then don't do it.
Steve Siegel from the Denver District Attorney's Office says to remember, you can say no to the press. And if you say yes, you can set the parameters. He also says to be realistic about what you can actually get from talking to the media.
You know, you hear the word closure. Telling my story will bring me closure. It just really does not, in my experience, provide that. And what the real search is for incorporating this horrible experience into your current circumstances.
You know, look, my son's dead, and everything else is meaningless as compared to that, but you want to make sure that maybe some small amount of good can come out of such a immense tragedy.
People that say, Craig, how do you continue to talk about it and do the media? You know, it's like, you don't get it. Just join me for one trip and see what I see, and then tell me how could I not do it.
Living in the spotlight is a challenging new reality for victims and their families. As Bob Swartz said, his son is dead. Everything after that is meaningless. But if they can learn how to play the media while factoring in their own limits and tolerance for the game, they may be able to find some meaning, even in the meaningless. For On the Media, I'm Karen Duffin.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.